Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome in to the Bet the Board podcast, powered by betonline.ag. The Week 7 recap show, trying to figure out what we saw over the weekend. Of course, we'll have our big game breakdown and preview of Monday Night Football Showdown in the NFC East between the Washington Redskins and Philadelphia Eagles. But before we get down to business, I have to bring on my esteemed colleague and co-host, the one, the only, Payne Insider.
Monday morning with Todd Furman. Love it.
I mean, you should probably be excited about it. A lot of people covet this type of experience that you're privy to every single Monday throughout the fall.
Ooh, not so much the female gender, but...
Hey, I mean, that leads me into a story, not to go off on a tangent. It's always funny when I talk to my mom during football season. She, of course, wants to know how the games are going. Could care less a lot about how we're doing outside of the fact that, like, am I getting out of the house? Am I eating well? Am I dating? All those kind of things. And she always says to me, she says, you need to make sure you meet a girl not during football season. She has to fall in love well in advance of August because she's got to love you before she has to deal with football season. I'd have to imagine, Payne, your folks echo similar sentiments.
That's sound advice. I think they've given up at this point.
Your parents on you or my parents on me?
Well, I think both of us. I think your mom's just probably a little nicer, and she says she's just telling you things that she wants to hear. But I mean, for me, I think they've given up hope. They know grandchildren aren't happening.
Well, not the ones that are at least planned, I'd imagine.
I've always said, meet a nice lady with skin, have a kid, and then, you know, just send her off on her way, wherever she needs to go back to. I don't know if I can deal with women in general. You know, the splashing of the toothpaste on the mirror, take out the garbage, like that. I don't have time for the little fights. That stuff drives me nuts.
You're making the transition well, though, with a small dog. I mean, it's the first step in terms of opening your doors to other living animals.
Don't rile that situation up. Sleeping nice and calm, not snoring in the background today.
Well, thankfully, we don't have to talk about dogs later in the show. It'll be birds of prey, so to speak, with the Eagles, as we said. Short favorites at home against the Washington Redskins. But, of course, before we get to the big game breakdown on Monday Night Football, not to get well ahead of ourselves, want to try and make sense of a little bit of what we saw yesterday, Payne. And, of course, we may as well go with the game most recently played. The Atlanta Falcons against the New England Patriots. The Falcons put together yet another dud, getting blown out by New England in a game where professional money took Atlanta from +3.5 through the key number 3 down to 2.5. And anyone who watched that game, you can make the case that it might have been the absolute wrong side.
That was the game day move. Opened as high as 4.5. So you got that savvy $1,000 nickel better, $2,000 better that got ahead. And then the game day move was massive. +3.5 and money line sent it down below that key number. And they basically no-showed. This is a team that the yards per play metrics had them number one still 2 weeks ago. And then they lay a dud in the second half against Miami. Last night, again, they moved the ball, but it just doesn't look fluid. It looks like there's something wrong. You can tell. Even the touchdown, right, to Julio Jones. It's a jump ball. Julio's got to make this exceptional play where he's just out-athleting Butler, but nothing comes easy. And that's one thing with Shanahan, where he had all these great targets. He had, you know, great weapons out of the backfield to catch the ball and Julio Jones, and he put them in positions to succeed. That's not going on right now, and that's the scary thing. New England was fantastic offensively. I know it didn't look great. Brady throws for about 250 yards, but they're able to get it going on the ground like they have all year. Their offensive line has been fantastic. Number one in adjusted line yards. Number two grading out in rushing success rate. So the offense has been fantastic. Defensively, they're starting to get back to that bend but don't break, keeping teams out of the end zone. I know last year everyone hyped that up, the number one scoring defense. But you know, they didn't play anybody last year. They didn't face really more than, I think, two quarterbacks with a pulse. It was Matt Ryan. It was Russell Wilson. And aside from that, it was just a slew of deadbeats at the quarterback position. So on that side of the ball, there is improvement. And I think that's the big thing, right? Belichick, he's got an ego, right? And it's awesome. Like, I don't need Chandler Jones. I don't need Jamie Collins. And we're just going to figure it out. And he's spending his resources on offense again, you know, or surrounding Tom Brady with some weapons. And that's the recipe. He thinks he's good enough to turn his defense into an average unit. And so far, you know, they're trending better. It was historically bad the first couple weeks. They've really gotten back into it the last 2-3 weeks. It was a good performance on Sunday night.
When we look at the Patriots' biggest competition in the AFC, it's a defense that's been, I don't know if elite is the right term to use for them, how they've performed all season long, but the Pittsburgh Steelers yet again show some of their strength on the defensive side of the ball, expanding that lead in the second half against the Bengals. We've talked about it at great lengths on this podcast. Pittsburgh, from a roster standpoint, more talented than New England. Are we starting to buy into some of what we've seen from Pittsburgh and their balance over the last 2 weeks as the offense establishes Le'Veon Bell, and defensively they're as good as anybody in the league right now?
Well, before they crap the bed to Jacksonville, everyone should already have had a ticket, because I was clamoring for it. I said, get a Pittsburgh Steelers futures ticket. So hopefully everyone has one of those at this point. And again, it's the most talented roster. Can they not F it up? And we saw this past week, right? Martavius Bryant was in the news, requested a trade, and then Tomlin and Big Ben say, no, we've talked to him, everything's good. Last night he hits Twitter again, calling Juju Smith-Schuster, he's not going to be very good, I'm better than him. And then he recanted his statement and said, hey, Juju Smith's going to be a fine receiver, one of the best, but I need my targets too, and I need to get out of here, basically, is what he said. So there's still some internal issues there. At some point, you just got to move on from him and get things rectified in your locker room. But most talented team, the defense has been fantastic. And it's, you know, not elite by any stretch, but they're good in all areas. And then you get Joe Hayden's contribution finally making his way in that secondary. He's going to help once he gets acclimated to things a little bit more. So defensively, they're there. Offensively, they're starting to get to the game plan, and that's Le'Veon Bell. And it's an awesome team. And if they can keep winning, they're going to get home field advantage. That's going to go a long way. Home field advantage is going to be so crucial for this team. I'm not worried about KC. They have their number. They have the game plan down pat to beat KC. But I think Pittsburgh needs home field advantage to beat Tom Brady.
All right, may as well stick in the AFC and take a look at what we've seen in the western half of the draw. Denver Broncos shut out for the first time since 1992. And I'll ask you this, can this offense be fixed? I mean, we're already starting to hear rumblings that maybe Paxton Lynch is going to be the guy under center when they take on a Kansas City team who, in their own right, coming into the next weekend, will be off two straight losses.
It's a bad offense, and there's really not a lot of weapons around there. You know, Demaryius Thomas, everyone's hyped him up. He's not a true number one. They go down with Emmanuel Sanders. He was out this week. They don't have a great tight end. The offensive line is allowing a ton of pressure, and that was one thing we focused on when we broke down the Chargers game this past week. We said, listen, if you get pressure on Simeon, he's about done. He had a 35 passer rating coming into this week. He completed 28% of passes against the Chargers when he was under pressure. And if you throw on the All-22, it was a game that I was watching before we started recording this. Didn't get a chance to watch it in its entirety. But it was a hot potato. He was just getting rid of it. And it just doesn't allow the offense to do anything, form a rhythm, let plays develop. So Simeon is brutal right now. And that's been the issue. Right now he's seeing ghosts back there because his offensive line isn't giving him any time.
Be an interesting situation to monitor, of course. We'll preview that Broncos and Chiefs Monday Night Football game a week from today as part of our American Sports Betting Coalition big game breakdown. In the NFC, playing one of the more bizarre football games we may see all season long. I've grown accustomed to seeing this in college football, but not so much in the pros. Here are the statistics. Team A outgains Team B 293 to 153 yards. Team A, 20 first downs. Team B, 5 first downs. Time of possession, 38-35 to 21-25. Offensive snaps, 69 to 37 in favor of Team A. Team B wins the turnover battle 3-0 and subsequently puts up a 17-3 victory. What kind of takeaways do we have from the Mitch Trubisky option offense, where he attempts 7 passes, completes 4 of them, and 70 yards of his 107 come on one completion at Tariq Cohen?
What would you like me to follow up with that? That was good. I mean, actually digging around this morning for some historic references on how many teams had won throwing that little of passes. And, I mean, I kid you not, you're going back to the 30s and the 40s and the 50s. And I mean, there are actually like five teams.
Army and Navy win that way all the time.
Yeah. There's actually like five teams in the NFL that had won without completing a pass or attempting a pass. It was pretty wild to see. I think Tebow had like 8 pass attempts. And they had won a game, but, you know, it's I don't know what to say. It's not very good. I know that's probably one of the look-ahead lines we'll look at later on because we've seen some movement in that. So, but, you know, they're playing hard. That's about all I can tell you. They're playing hard. They're winning some games. I don't know if it translates to success moving forward, but that division's wide open, and they believe in Trubisky, so we'll see what happens.
Well, you mentioned that division. The Vikings get another win at home against the Baltimore Ravens, continuing to do things very workmanlike, might be the best way to describe their performances. Did you see anything from Green Bay to give you optimism that Brett Hundley can at least be a competent starting quarterback going forward for the Packers?
No.
I mean, you watch the games closer than I do. I kind of sometimes get blinded by the stats. You could tell that they came out with a very run-heavy offense early on. But even when they were playing from behind, it didn't look like Hundley was able to do much.
Not very good. I mean, not competent. Not a guy that's been in the system for 3 years, learning from the very best. His best attribute is his legs at this point. I know there was a little weather. They got the ground game going like I thought they would and should in Jones. Has secured that job, it appears. Ty Montgomery is kind of gone to the wayside. I know he's still dealing with the injury. But you got a semblance of a ground game. You got help. You got support. And I know it came early on, and then you watched the adjustment towards the end of the second quarter and more so in the second half, and it said, hey, listen, we're gonna make Hundley beat us here. And he just couldn't. So I'm not sure what they are moving forward. It's not a good football team. I know last week there was a prop up. Will they make or miss the playoffs? And I think you could have initially laid $1.25 on the no. That's probably a fantastic bet at this point. When you look at the landscape of the rest of the division, I don't really like anybody. I know Minnesota's got staring at the Browns this week. They're going to end up going, you know, they're going to be favored to go 6-2 into their bye week. They're favored to win the division. I believe they're even money coming into this week. And I saw that take some sharp money on some of our accounts. So that appears to be where professionals are leaning, that they're just out to such a head start in that division. And they're going to probably pick up a win this week, head into their bye 6-2, and they're going to be the favorite to win the North.
Well, I think when you talk about the Vikings and the division as a whole, known commodities, that defense probably has to be the one thing you know what you're going to get week in, week out. Lions, of course, we'll see them on full display Sunday night, taking on the aforementioned Steelers. So it'll be interesting to see what this team looks like coming out of the bye. The Bears, a big challenge this weekend with the Saints. And then, of course, the Packers still trying to figure out exactly what they'll look like on the offensive side. As we do every week, though, Payne, we compare some of the numbers, look ahead versus current prices, and I think a great place to start, and I also want to get your thoughts on what you saw from them yesterday. The Miami Dolphins, on a short week, travel to Baltimore, a game at a look ahead number from the Westgate Superbook, had the Ravens listed as a 4.5-point favorite. We see betonline.ag open the Ravens as a modest 3-point chalk. The big storyline here will be the Dolphins changing quarterbacks, going from Jay Cutler dealing with some broken ribs to Matt Moore. That same Matt Moore that led a 2-touchdown comeback against the New York Football Jets yesterday.
Did have an ugly interception before that comeback transpired. You know, this is, for me, this might actually be a slight upgrade for the Dolphins, going to Matt Moore, just based on familiarity, based on the emotion and how players react when he's in the game. And a lot of people out there, most Dolphins fans, didn't get this move to Cutler in general, and it was a business decision. Right, and we know Matt Moore, he's a career backup, doesn't really have the will or want to be the head guy. He's happy collecting millions, holding a clipboard, and getting some PT. He just doesn't have that motivation. He also has a tendency to turn it over. The interception before the comeback started was as bad as it gets. And we saw his turnover issues in Pittsburgh last year in the playoffs. But I think more than that, and a lot of people don't get this, is when you look at the roster for Miami, they didn't have a number two if they chose Matt Moore to be their guy. Like, Drew Doughty, the kid from Western Kentucky, isn't that guy. He's got no arm strength. David Fales showed pretty well, but he's not that guy. Another guy with questionable arm talent. So you have a shoddy offensive line, and if it was just Matt Moore, it's probably him injured this week, and you're going to one of those aforementioned guys on the road in a short week at Baltimore, and you're not going to have a prayer. So it was an insurance policy. There's just not a drop-off there. And then again, it might be a slight upgrade. This has always been a tough game for the Dolphins from a physical standpoint. Baltimore just plays a physical brand of football. We know when they're at home, it's a completely different team. This feels like a back-against-the-wall situation. I know a lot of guys are playing the spot so far earlier in the week, laying it with Baltimore. I'm probably not going to be on that train.
Do you trust? I mean, where does Baltimore go from here from an offensive standpoint? I know we touched on it a little bit going into their game against the Vikings, but there doesn't appear to be any silver lining for what this team is attempting to do on that side of the football.
No. Nothing. I mean, there's just not a lot of weapons there. The offensive line's banged up, and that's the biggest thing. When you have a team that wants to just enforce their will and play this physical brand of football, and I know a lot of guys just kind of look at the metrics and don't watch the games or don't really have insight into, you know, what's going on in the NFL. Like, this is a Baltimore team that has made its name on being physical, just being a bigger, better man than the guy across from him. And when you lose guys like Marshall Yanda, when you lose other guys on your offensive line, when your two best defensive tackles have missed time, it's tough to play that style. We know so they got some help back this past week on the defensive line. You're not getting Yanda back, so it's tough to employ that style. But it's always one that's helped them, especially against the Dolphins. We saw a blowout last year. The Dolphins just had no answers. This game, though, is a little different. The Dolphins have some linebackers now this year that are competent. They can cover some stuff out of the backfield. They can play physical. They're stopping the run. They're going to force Joe Flacco to beat him.
Should have added on this game, too, as we look at betonline.ag, Baltimore 3 lay $1.25, total 37.5. Don't want to spend too much time. This total going to trend even lower, Payne? I mean, we talk about key numbers all the time. Could we see this number going to 37 or even 36.5 with a short week, given the, I don't know what to call it, stigma or expectation surrounding these two teams on the offensive side of the ball?
It's certainly two teams that offensively have to run the ball to have success, and both teams know that. And always, you know, the biggest part of this is it's a short week. No one's implementing anything new. These are those games where you literally have to go out and just be better than the man across from you and win that one-on-one battle to create positive situations for your offense. So neither of these teams are great offensively when you look at any of the metrics, and they're both going to want to establish the ground game. So that's why this total opened pretty low. The ones that opened 38 got immediate resistance. 37 is a key number. We don't really talk about it anymore because it's 2017 and not 1920, but it is a key number.
Well, I mean, you mentioned 1919 in offense, as we talked about earlier, that struggled to throw the forward pass in the Chicago Bears on the road at the New Orleans Saints. Current number on this game, Payne, New Orleans a 7.5-point favorite at betonline.ag, total 48. Modest movement from a look-ahead number, though, where the Saints were an 8.5-point chalk. We discuss it all the time, dead numbers from 7.5 to 8.5 to 9.5, etc. But is this a spot when you look at the Bears and go, how do they even have the offensive firepower to keep up with New Orleans, who didn't look that great against Green Bay and still found a way to win that game comfortably?
Yeah, I didn't want to crap on the Bears twice, so let's just, you know, probably do it here. I mean, I love the story. The defense is showing up. The team is clearly rallying around Trubisky. He's giving them some energy. Like, guys in the locker room aren't stupid, right? Like, they know Trubisky gives them the best chance to win. They're playing for him. But as you alluded to, like, you can't attempt 7 passes and win many games. You know, in back-to-back weeks, the Bears have scored 3 defensive touchdowns, and they've been for 90 yards, 75 yards, and 75 yards. And, you know, like, in layman's terms, what does that mean? Like, it's not just 21 points on the scoreboard for you, but Chicago's opponent was driving deep in territory, trying to get points of their own. So it's 21 points on the scoreboard, but it might be at minimum a 30-point swing in total. You're not going to be able to win these games, especially against the Saints offense that's humming right now, especially on the ground. Like, this isn't just Drew Brees chucking it to his slew of weapons. The offensive line is fantastic. The adjusted line yards, I believe right now, is number one or two in the NFL. They're running the ball. They have a two-headed tailback system that's working out fantastic. So this was an offense in previous years where it's like it's Brees and it's passing, and if that doesn't work, there's not much else. No, they're running the ball now too. So it's a two-dimensional offense that is extremely tough to game plan for. You got a deep threat in Ted Ginn. You got Kamara catching the ball out of the backfield. Then you can go ground and pound with your fantastic offensive line. You got Michael Thomas. Like, it's a fantastic offense. It's well-rounded. It's extremely tough to defend.
Should we be considering the Saints the favorites right now to win the NFC South?
By the metrics, it's still Atlanta. But my gut says the Saints are going to make a real run here, barring injury, obviously. The defense continues to get better each week. Marshawn Lattimore, just fantastic right now. He's basically become an island corner, and he's shutting down the opponent's best weapon. So the defense continues to get a little bit better each week. The offense is humming from all angles. I think they have six games left at home, just four on the road. So my gut says I want to be a Saints fan here.
Is that a gut filled with green juice and healthy eating options, or we got cauliflower pizza? What was on the weekend's menu there during football Saturday and Sunday?
Yesterday we went a little turkey burger action, a little garlic green beans, had my green juice. So things are flowing this morning.
Sometimes it's always good to feel a little bit lighter when you go into the podcasting world bright and early on a Monday morning, trying to erase some of those demons from the weekend. And Payne, I think when we talk about erasing demons, we hit on their performance on Sunday Night Football. The Atlanta Falcons, we've seen the market respond in a negative manner as they go back onto the road against a yet another AFC East opponent. Look ahead number here at the Falcons, 7-point favorites at the New York Jets. Now you look at the current price at betonline.ag. Lo and behold, Atlanta, a 4.5-point favorite. Total off the board there right now, 46 starting to pop. Dare I say this might be a buy low opportunity for the much maligned Atlanta offense?
I don't want to get too far ahead. I want to. I want to dig into this a little bit more. The yards per play metric still look okay for the Falcons, and they're eventually going to get this thing figured out, I would think. But you can tell right now it's not as smooth, it's not as rhythmic. Their elite athletes aren't being put in the same spots they were a year ago. And I'll transition to this a little bit here. If you're a San Francisco 49er fan and you're looking at your coach and saying, we're 0-7, he came to us and his name was being thrown through the mud because he didn't run the ball in the Super Bowl. Like, just watch what Atlanta's doing this year and you're going to feel very, very good with your situation at head coach, especially when you look at your salary cap. I think they got like $118 million to spend next
year. Kirk Cousins, baby, start hitting that foghorn.
So, you know, Shanahan is sorely missed here. And, you know, there's two ways to look at this. Certainly they dominated the Lions, but you could also say, listen, they're one play away there. They're one play away in the Bears game from being 1-5. So there's some serious concern here. And again, I always say this, when you look at a team, and I know I will use this example because, again, Belichick has an ego and he thinks he can take dog crap and turn it into something average and then spend his money elsewhere. But when you start to look at teams and they don't take on the identity of their coach, there's some issues. And we're seeing with Oakland, right? Jack Del Rio, defensive guys, defense stinks. This is a Falcons team led by a defensive guy, came from the Seattle coaching tree. Defensively, they're not very good, and that's the biggest problem. But when you try to make a case for the Jets this week, you just can't do it. It's a nice story. They're playing free with house money every single week. There's no pressure there. There's no expectation for the Jets. You know, they kind of just left the Jets and Todd Bowles out in the middle of the sea for dead and said, hey, find your way back. And so far, it looks like, you know, they might have spotted the shore, but, you know, that's not the case. Every single win they have this year came in a horrific spot or situation. Okay, we'll give you credit for the Browns, but that's the Browns. You caught the Dolphins off of what? It was, you know, 10, 11 days away from home dealing with Hurricane Irma. They traveled to New York. Their bags are already packed for London. It was a horrible spot. You get the Jaguars back from London. Horrible spot. You almost threw the game away there. You know, They were dominated in the second half. I think, I'm looking at this right now, 14 plays in the fourth quarter they ran against the Dolphins on Sunday. Negative 22 yards. So it's not a good football team. And so this feels like probably a spot, if you are going to back the Falcons ever, this would be it.
And I'll add one other layer. And I know we talk about these look-ahead lines and their valuable tool and how quickly we see the market respond, public perception or otherwise. Last weekend, we mentioned on this podcast, we talked about the Steelers look-ahead number 6.5 over the Bengals. We saw the market disagree with that. That number closes for the Steelers end up winning and doing so comfortably. The Seahawks was a better example. We didn't touch on that game, but this may be the perfect spot to do so before we hit on one last look-ahead number, Payne. Seattle was a 7-point favorite on a look-ahead number. That number got as low as 3 on game day against the Giants. And to my eyes, and I think your eyes, there was a complete mismatch on the football field, and this was a Seattle team that trailed at the half 7-3 against the Giants. What do we make of some of the movement we've seen on game day this season?
you know, that line opened as high as 8. And, you know, it wasn't an overwhelming support for Seattle from the public, but there's a little bit of support there, and I'm sure a lot of people saw what the Giants did on Sunday Night Football to Denver, and they said, you know what, they'll have a shot here, but there was certainly some sharp money. And usually, and this is one game, and I usually don't like going down this path, but there were I had received a bunch of phone calls this week from very sharp people asking who the hell is on the Giants. Nobody really knew. There was one group, there's a couple math guys, you know. There wasn't anyone that was overly important to move that game from an open of 8 to as low as 3. So someone had some serious money on that game. We're not quite sure who it was. It was you know, when you go into that game and you saw how the Giants performed on Sunday Night Football in the style in which they would have to operate, there was no way against the Seattle defense with 2 weeks to prepare they were just going to play bully ball. It just wasn't going to work. And at halftime, you know, Seattle's offense, slow start, East Coast, off the bye week, it struggled. But you look at the Giants' touchdown, it was Rawls fumbling at his own 40, it getting returned, and the Giants having to go 17 yards to score points. That's all it was. And I think they had about 150 total yards. It was ugly. I mean, there's just nothing there offensively. And
how dare you talk about Evan Engram that way? How dare you?
Yeah, I mean,
he
had a nice performance. That was really the only guy you have to stop. But I mean, even if you know you have to stop him, when you get that type of athlete on a linebacker or a safety, it's a mismatch. So that was most of their offense. But this Giants team is not very good right now, especially offensively.
Well, I guess if we go from one bad offense to, we may as well go to another bad offense in the game that we talked about, a Monday Night Football, an AFC West matchup between the Denver Broncos and Kansas City Chiefs. Current number for this game, Payne, KC is 7-point favorite at betonline.ag. No total listed there, but 43.5, 44, kind of the market consensus. Kansas City, extra time to prepare, playing on Thursday, then playing on a Monday. The look-ahead number here from the Westgate Superbook had KC a 6.5-point favorite. I don't ever like to put words in your mouth, but safe to say that we agree with this move from 6.5 to 7, and is it enough to compensate for what Denver's become offensively lately?
I think for a Monday Night Football game, it's probably the smart play to put it up at a touchdown. You know, there's a way to beat the Chiefs, and we've talked about it nonstop. And if you can keep this game within distance to where you can feature your running backs and rely on your defense, because the defense was lights out again against San Diego, right? They, you know, special teams gives up a long one. They give up a long pass. But aside from that, they stymied Phillip Rivers in that offense for the most part. So if you can get C.J. Anderson going, which is the best part of your offensive line, running the ball, they were just two scores down, so they didn't really stay committed to that. But Anderson was running for about 4.5 yards a carry. If you can get Jamaal Charles going, the number one running back in NFL history in yards per rush attempt, and you know he's going to want to scorn his old team, the strategy is quite simple, and you can employ it. If you ground and pound these guys and let your defense go to work, they can keep this respectable. The problem is they seem reliant upon Simeon, and that's just going to be a recipe for disaster here.
I mean, it hasn't been good. We talked about Denver, some of their trials and tribulations offensively. Three touchdowns now in the last four games. Clearly, they have to get back to basics as the 40-point explosions against the likes of the Dallas Cowboys, a distant memory. But a game, of course, like we always do, we'll preview in greater detail when Kansas City takes on the Denver Broncos at Arrowhead next week on Monday Night Football.
We leave in the other one this, for Thursday.
What's another one for Thursday?
Yeah.
Fire away.
No, we'll leave that game for Thursday.
Oh ho ho! I think I knew where you were going with that, but I figured we could put that one in the back burner.
Yeah,
give us something to build on going into that. Of course, we do have the Redskins and Eagles big game breakdown coming up, but before we get there, as we always do as part of our Monday movie review, Marshall, not exactly a normal choice for us, but I think we were both pleasantly surprised with the way the movie played out. From an entertainment standpoint.
What? I mean, I'm into those kind of movies.
I mean, you're not a history guy by any stretch. I mean, from what we've seen in the past.
It was done differently, though. I mean, you don't have to be in history to enjoy that movie, I don't think.
No, I think to know the story of Marshall Thurgood and the NAACP and the impact he had, you don't have to be a history buff because they lay it out there. Obviously, taking creative liberties, and they do on the silver screen. But, yes, you don't have to know the whole story to be able to follow the movie.
And it was kind of from a... It certainly wasn't a comedy, but there were some parts in there when you have, what's his name, Josh Gad, I believe. He's the guy from The Wedding Ringer. I know you didn't see that movie, and I'm not a Kevin Hart fan. I don't really like his stand-up, but his movies aren't bad. The Wedding Ringer was a solid movie. So Josh Gad was in that. Pretty good. Kate Hudson was in this one, if you're a Kate Hudson fan. She's a bit weathered for my liking, but you know,
she didn't exactly play a big role, though. I mean,
no, she didn't.
I should take that back. She played a big role in terms of plot implications, right. But as far as lines and contributing personality wise, if you're going to the movie thinking that she's going to have a Academy Award winning type performance, probably not the flick you want to see.
Yeah, you take what you can get. I will. When we were looking at this, and we were, you know, kind of pondering which movies we were going to see last week, I looked at IMDb and it was like a 6.3 out of 10. People are agreeing with our assessment of this because it's now approaching 7 out of 10, and I think it's going to keep going up and up. I would see this movie. And if you're a sports fan, you probably saw the movie 42 with Jackie Robinson. Same guy. I think his name's what? Chadwick Boseman or something like that. He's in this movie. So there's a different role for him, but I thought it was a good role. It was a good movie. I would definitely see it.
If this movie's trending up.
Yeah, it was worth our time, especially during football season.
Have we seen Blade Runner trend down after our scathing movie review we offered up last Monday? Are they still like 96 on Rotten Tomatoes?
I don't know if we're getting much cred in the movie review industry.
We got to try and have a little bit more start to have influence there the same way we can in football. I will say my cousin goes, he listens to the podcast every week and says, "I can't believe you didn't like Blade Runner." I said, "What was there to like in the movie? It was terrible."
Maybe he can write the blog that you were asking about.
We asked, and we never got anybody to submit a blog to try and defend Blade Runner and why it deserved the prominent place it's received amongst the sci-fi community.
What did he say he liked about it?
He couldn't give me, like, answers, but I also probably didn't really pay attention when he tried to explain it to me over text.
Yeah,
I'm like, I'm not going to deal with this right now.
If you're not going to pay attention to the movie, why pay attention to analysis from a Homer about the movie? Is he a sci-fi guy?
Not really, at least I don't think.
Oh,
I mean, I may have to try and clarify. We may have to have a little sit-down around Thanksgiving and try and figure out exactly if he's loyal to the sci-fi community.
Those guys are like a cult.
They have to defend their own. They don't want others to try and eat their babies. This week, which direction are we going in there, brother?
Well, I'm going to leave it up to you. You have The Foreigner with Jackie Chan and Pierce Brosnan, two guys over the hill. But I will say this, it's getting good reviews so far. I'm stunned by this.
Review for a Jackie Chan movie? 5.5 out of 10?
No, this one's way up there. It's like 7.5 out of 10 right now.
Wow, that's a big step for a movie that's usually not plot intensive, probably just more built around action.
Yeah, and then you have, I think, Only the Brave, which, if you are an Entourage fan, I believe is based around the premise of Smoke Jumpers. Don't believe Vince is in this one, but I think that's kind of its premise. So those are your two options. We'll leave them up to you.
So no Vince. We actually get talented actors in this movie. In the smoke, in the Smoke Jumpers recreation.
I believe he is out saving the whales still.
I think Josh Brolin is a headliner. I think that's like in our wheel. So let's go Only the Brave this week. I'm not sure that The Foreigner is going to make the cut.
Okay.
We could probably put The Foreigner, you know, we could put it on the back burner because we're about to get into like that dead period between now and Thanksgiving where we might not get a whole lot of reasonable movie choices. Although I think next week we're going to have a few with Thank You for Your Service and Suburbicon most likely. That one we might have to put out to vote. I want to see if anybody has strong sentiments one way or another on those two.
Okay, so well, next week we'll put those two out to vote. That sounds like a plan. Maybe we'll sneak The Foreigner in there as like a three-man rotation. And let's see. Maybe we have a huge contingent of Jackie Chan fans. You never know.
We can definitely try and run the three-man weave. We'll see.
What do you do if they choose The Foreigner over the other two, Suburbicon and...
Then I am a man of the people. Okay. I believe in the democratic process. If they choose The Foreigner over Suburbicon and Thank You for Your Service, then that is the movie I'm going to see to honor the lasting contributions our loyal Bet the Board audience contributes each and every week.
There you go.
So, you know, see, that's how I roll. I mean, for all the positive reviews they've given us on iTunes, it's the least we can do to try and give back to our listenership. Hopefully we can give back with this game as well to get them to the window. Washington and Philadelphia on the docket for Monday Night Football. The Eagles, a 5-point favorite at betonline.ag. Paying total on this game, 49. It's a revenge scenario from week one. A game that we were on the Philadelphia Eagles, needed to hold on for dear life, getting a late pick six to get over the hump. The Eagles have a chance this week if they get the win tonight to be the lone remaining team with just one loss. And before we get into some of the X's and O's on tonight's game, do we believe that the Eagles are as good as their record indicates through the early going?
They're a good football team. I mean...
Are you trying to convince me or are you trying to convince yourself?
They're a good football team. I mean, you know, the offense is good. I'd like them to have a little bit of better ground attack, but it's getting better. Smallwood is back tonight. Maybe that'll help a little bit. It's a good team. It's a good football team. Got a good defense.
I mean, they're starting to play a little better.
The rest of the division is, you know, they're a good football team. I don't think they're bad. I'm not
One thing we have to do before we get into the full breakdown, and of course, this is where, you know, my lack of polish as a host comes in. You have to take care of your sponsors, and every Monday and Thursday, our standalone games come to you courtesy of the American Gaming Association and their American Sports Betting Coalition that aims to educate, advocate, empower, and deliver content regarding their ongoing legalization efforts. For more information, go to sportsbettingamerica.com. And one thing, we will have the American Gaming Association CEO Jeff Freeman on over the next couple of weeks trying to figure out what works schedule-wise. I know a lot of our listeners appreciated those interviews that we had with him in the past. But all right, we can get back into the game now, and as I show my inability to try and multitask.
So yes, Philadelphia is a good football team. Offensively, they play a style in 2017, that's conducive to success, right? You want that efficient passing attack. They're one of the best with the short passing game. Their defense is very good. Defensive line's fantastic. Looks like some reinforcements are coming back. Potentially Ronald Darby as early as tonight. I don't know if I would rush him back, especially right now. You're doing pretty well without him, but that's going to be an added bonus there. Special teams have been pretty good. Overall, it's a solid team. I think right now, number two overall in efficiency. All factors or all components factored in, special teams, offense, defense. It's a good football team.
Lane Johnson, Jordan Hicks, do we expect them to be out there as well? Michael Kendricks, I think those are the three guys that I had circled on the injury reports as well to keep tabs on.
Lane Johnson and Hicks look like a go. I think Kendricks a little bit more dicey.
Redskins on their side of the ball, some defensive injuries. Josh Norman, of course, ruled out dealing with a rib injury, but the secondary could be down another. I guess I'll call him
body.
Key Cog because of how he's perceived. Yeah, I was going to say Key Cog because of how he's perceived, but I think body probably more apropos when we talk about Breshad Breeland.
Yeah, I mean, it's a scary secondary. That's what scares me here. I think eventually there will be some money on Washington, and I'm not sure if I can get over the hump there because of that secondary. With Norman shelved and the style in which Philadelphia plays, right, it's that short, quick passing attack that doesn't really allow you to get a ton of pressure, and with Lane Johnson back, you would think that opportunity for pressure lessens. But when you get Wentz at home right now, he's completing 69% of his passes at home. We know it drops off a little bit on the road, just 57% this year. But at home, nearly 70% of his passes are complete. And you have a secondary that's going to be without some of its key cogs. You're always worried about, as a defense, getting beat deep so you allow room in front. Well, the room in front against Philadelphia's offense just isn't going to work. And that's what scares me a little bit here. Again, professional money is eventually going to come on Washington here at some point.
How do you see the other side of the ball? Washington's offense matching up against Philadelphia's defense, which appears to at least be healthy, but some guys that are going to be out there maybe a little bit earlier than anticipated.
The Eagles' defensive line is the best in football. They don't always get after the quarterback, and so I think it's not perceived that way, but they're far and away the number one team in adjusted line yards. They essentially make you become one-dimensional before you even go out there on the field. Like, if you're an offensive coordinator and you're saying, hey, let's game plan this week, let's try to be balanced, like, it typically goes out the window before it even starts. I think the way that you're going to have to counter that is use Chris Thompson in that short passing game as an extension of the run. Philly's linebackers can be had a little bit in pass coverage, especially if Kendricks is out. You know, you got to use both your tight ends, and that's the way to go. Use that short, quick passing attack over the middle, and you're going to have some success, because I don't think you're going to be able to just run it right at that defense. I know Rob Kelly is going to come back this week. They're going to try to use him, but I think it's much more efficient getting Chris Thompson out there in space. Use him on the safeties. Use him on linebackers. Just quick, short passes, and use that as an extension of your ground game. And that's going to be the most efficient way to attack that defense.
You mentioned professional money. Would plus six be enough to get you to the party with the Redskins, or better left to fight a different day?
I like that. There you go. To the party. Well, you know, there's going
to
be some hesitation.
I mean, I like to take some of your catchphrases and try and use them when I can to set you up on a pedestal, despite my inadequate hosting abilities most of these shows that we do.
Everyone's kind of cognizant of six being important now that the extra point has been moved back. We touched on that a little bit on Thursday's podcast. So, you know, you're going to see that 5.5 minus 15. And you know, at this rate, what six is becoming, it's probably worth the buy to six minus 15 if you are going to go that route. Let's see if it gets there naturally. I mean, there's been a little bump in the market here this morning on Philadelphia. Let's see if it continues to trend that way. But there will be an appetite for Washington at some point.
Action looked pretty balanced, at least as far as you can tell.
Yeah, I was seeing what was about 60-40 this morning on Philadelphia.
Yeah, not really. Yeah, I mean, I'm seeing similar, and that's kind of the sentiments that I've been fed as well, which I'll essentially call in a standalone game relatively balanced.
Yeah, for a standalone game, they've been pretty uneven this year.
Yeah, I mean, favorites getting back in the win column this past week. Finally, after we saw underdogs get out to a commanding lead, favorites and public favorites at that. I did speak to a couple books who said almost every single parlay they booked in the afternoon slate, Cowboys to Seahawks. So be interested to see when some of those industry numbers end up breaking. One last question I have for you, Payne, on this game that pertains to these two teams. If I were to set the over-under at playoff teams in the NFC East right now, obviously the division champ, a formality, are you going over or under if I set, you know, you have to lay $1.30 if you want to go over 1.5?
I have to lay $1.30.
So basically,
well,
between,
your Giants, you know, are out.
Yeah, my Giants are out. That is a given. They're not coming back from the depths of 1-6.
Ooh. Arizona, you can toss those guys out now. The South could potentially sneak two teams in. Ooh, that's a good question.
I mean, I try
Zeke
and set halfway
suspension,
decent numbers.
Loom. Man, you know what? I'm going to go over.
All right. That's what I mean. I figured that made a little bit of sense. Between the Redskins and Cowboys, one of those teams gets over the hump, and it may only take, what, 9-7, you think, to get into the postseason? Maybe 10-6?
I mean, 10-6 definitely get you in, I would say.
Yeah.
The problem is these teams in the North could screw the – I mean, a bad team from the North could leak their way in here.
Oh, what a story that would be if the Mitchell Trubisky-led Bears end up getting in there with a 9-7 record. I think the Vikings, as you mentioned, have taken sharp money to win the division. They're front runners there, but be an interesting race to watch as we get ever so close to the midpoint of the NFL season.
The South is a bear.
Huh?
The South division's a bear.
Well, that's the big question there. I think you obviously get the division champ, again, from the South, and the question becomes, does Carolina win the division? Do the Saints win the division? Does Tampa get up off the deck? What do we think of Atlanta? That feels like a division that should get two teams in, but I'm not sure that's going to be the case.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. They got Ryan Khalil, their center, back this week. He had, I think there was two series he was out there, re-aggravated the neck. So it looks like Ryan Khalil's down again. Olsen, though, supposed to be back sooner than expected, so that's a welcome target back for Cam. But right now, they're not getting anything going on the ground. Ooh, yeah, man.
We have to give you a little food for thought. You don't have to. I'm not going to make
one.
You adhere
that's
to your prediction one
that's
way
actually,
or the other.
That's making me think a little bit.
It's good. I'm glad I can help make you think on a Monday. And you mentioned Carolina. They, of course, have a big game against Tampa, one that we'll probably cover in greater detail on Thursday. But I think we've done enough damage for a Monday morning for all of our friends and family that are listening to some of the trials and tribulations of our respective illustrious dating histories and prospects to bear children in this world. I think we've done enough to try and scar people's lives.
Little taste of our lives.
Yeah, I mean, football season does not make for the most glamorous lifestyle. Let's put it that way. Any parting shots before we rejoin all of our listeners in the professional ranks on Thursday? Of course, we will have the college football podcast on Wednesday, talking about the two big games there between NC State, Notre Dame, Penn State, Ohio State, among others. You know, want to give you the floor for your final parting shots.
No floor needed. This was a quick one. This is good. In and out. First thing
I mean, that should be the goal. In and out for us, apparently, still done in about 45 to 50 minutes.
Yeah,
so
it wasn't that.
Hopefully,
it wasn't
we can make your commute home from work a little bit more enjoyable on a Monday, sharing some of our thoughts and sentiments surrounding NFL Week 7. No official investment coming from us on Eagles Redskins tonight. Special thanks to our parent sponsor, BetOnline.ag, like always. And, of course, the American Gaming Association Sports Betting Coalition, who brings you your big game breakdowns every Monday and Thursday throughout the NFL season. For Payne Insider, you can follow him on Twitter, at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there as well. Be sure to follow at BetTheBoard on Twitter. Subscribe, rate, get involved on iTunes. It goes a long way to show your appreciation. Good luck with whatever you decide to wager on this evening in the Redskins and Eagles, and we'll be right back with you on Thursday to see you at the window.